from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners. The road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Patriots Monday on WEEI is brought to you by Northeast Men's Health, McFarlane Energy, Shaw's and Star Market, Town Fair Tire, your New England Kubota dealers, and Drains by James.
In reference to the developmental plan, how would you describe sort of the core of what that is?
I'm not going to get too much into the plan, but, you know, at the core, you know, it's just the extra work. We talked about the different tools that we have, and all the quarterbacks are really taking advantage of that, whether it's the virtual reality, the extra walkthrough time, the meetings by themselves. They're just doing all of that extra stuff that's really paying dividends.
Jerod Mayo discussing the Drake May development plan. A plan that, I don't know, you got to say it's not working necessarily, right? If you're still with the twos. Unless the plan was, no, we're not going to develop him this quickly. Either way, it's a confounding one for Patriots fans, one that leaves you with more questions than answers as we cruise into the 5 o'clock hour here. Jones and Mego, no Jones today. He'll be back tomorrow. It's me, Arcand, in the big chair. We got your phone calls at 617-779-7937. In between all those interviews and everything and triple play in the last segment, we've been neglecting the phone. So let's go to him right now, talk to Coach up in New Hampshire. Hey, Coach.
Hey, Christian and Mego, how are you?
What's happening?
If I had Alex Van Pelt and Jerod Mayo in a room, I would pose two football-related questions to them as it relates to the Patriots' offense. Here's my first one.
Okay.
You're depleted at tight end. I think it's wonderful. This Sunday, we may actually get a chance to see the Patriots in 10 personnel, meaning one back, no tight ends, 4 wideouts on the field, and let's see which quarterback functions well in what I would call, like, nowadays offense, because the Pats have been about 80 to 100 years behind others. Mm-hmm. My second one, a little bit more important. There is no offensive tackle on the current roster, or even many in the NFL, that can block T.J. Watt or Keon White or any of the Boses, and that's just because they're body types. It just can't do it. Mm-hmm. I am still in this camp where I would love to see Keon White, that's just one person, that one body type like Keon White take on a T.J. Watt. What I'm trying to say is the entire NFL can't see that offensive tackles that are 6'9", 350 are not athletic enough to block today's edge rushers. Until that changes, our quarterbacks will continue to get hurt. I want your thoughts on both topics.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for the call, Coach. Appreciate
it. Didn't they kind of try that experiment with Isaiah Wynn?
Yes.
And it didn't work?
No.
Now, some of that might have been Isaiah Wynn hated it here.
Not a good pick. And so he hasn't been great with the Dolphins either. So, I mean,
so, yeah, it's not just the fit. Are we just going to write off all offensive linemen in the league or the majority of them? I mean, he brings up T.J. Watt.
I like how he said T.J. Watt, the Boses, and Keon White. It's like, yeah, right. Those four guys were all equally the same.
They're all the same. They're all elite. Well, Mike Onwenu did block against T.J. Watt. It's just T.J. Watt had his bell rung early in that game.
True.
So it's kind of hard to measure now. But I think we came out of that in the immediate aftermath, at least I did, going, hey, Mike Onwenu, you might have something here. He was injured for a lot of the season and unavailable. And then when he got out there, he looked pretty good, which is why I thought he deserved the money that he got in the offseason. I don't think that you need to undertake some kind of like drastic existential approach to the offensive line. I think you just need to invest in a left tackle, something that for whatever reason you have not done in a realistic way in the last several seasons. You had the Trent Brown experiment and you went back to it and it didn't work, and then you didn't pivot from any direction from there.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the first question he asked was about the tight ends and having a 10 group go out there with a bunch of wide receivers and no tight ends. If you had a bunch of great wide receivers, I'd say, yeah, sure, do that. You know, get them all out there, get them involved.
What if you have a bunch of maybe okay receivers?
Then I don't really see the point of this. Also, Austin Hooper was back at practice today. He missed yesterday. He was back there today. And Jerod Mayo said today that he expects Hunter Henry's going to be ready for week one. So
good.
I'm not thinking that there's going to be a big dearth at tight end this year. Maybe. I mean, you're not talking about a bunch of young guys here, but they do have the rookie, the kid Bell that they drafted. They got Wilcox, who I think actually got hurt yesterday too. But, you know, he'll be back at some point. So you have enough tight ends. It's not like you don't have any. But if you lose Henry and all of a sudden there's a big drop off there, that's no question about it. About that.
Henry should be a go-to red zone guy. That's who he was in the first season he was here with Mac Jones, and that should be something that you can pencil in. At least you understand what this guy does well.
Yeah.
At least you can depend on him for that. So that's good to hear. It's just when you're down in the red zone, whoever is playing quarterback, if it's going to be Jacoby Brissett, has he developed enough chemistry with Hunter Henry with how much he's been out? Or is this just going to be something that's experimental in the first couple of games?
Yeah, we'll see about that. As for the offensive line situation, it's one that's very dire. And if you look at our poll results today, 91% of you out there who voted in, and it's about 800 votes, a lot of votes, 91% of you are saying it's the offensive line that concerns you the most. I agree. I wrote offensive line as well. But if you really examine the question here and why it's such a big concern, it's not the entire offensive line. Mike Onwenu, we feel good about at guard or really wherever you play him, but right now he's a guard. We feel good about David Andrews. City So, we feel fine about. Even on the right tackle with Caden Wallace or Chukwuma Okorafor, I know he hasn't had a good camp so far, but it's the right tackle. Those are their natural positions. You signed a guy and you drafted a guy who could both play right tackle. You're really only SOL at the left tackle position, which is the most important one out of every, especially if you have a right-handed quarterback, it's the most important one on the line, and it's the one that they paid the least amount of attention to and were the least serious about. And so when you say the offensive line, yeah, the offensive line's a problem, but it's not the whole line. It's just the one position. And that, to me, makes it so much worse. That makes it so much worse.
You mean the way that they failed to,
yes,
for lack of a better word, tackle that position?
You did not have to turn over that entire line. You didn't. I mean, you had to make some additions, sure, and you did it right tackle, but you didn't address the elephant in the room. And it's not a Trent Brown toilet joke. Like, the elephant in the room here was that you don't have a left tackle, that you are bringing in a rookie quarterback, and that he's going to be right-handed, and you're going to have to protect that blind side. And they just said, whatever, we'll figure it out somehow. Hey, you know, we got the third pick on the waiver wire. We'll be fine. Don't worry about it. And that's just such a half-assed, crappy way to go about that. I understand that there's wide receivers out there that they could have had. There were tackles they could have had, too. There's tackles they could have drafted. There's different ways they could have gone about this very important part of the offensive line, which now that they've let sort of fall by the wayside, has become the main concern for everybody viewing this team, except you, other than you, who still thinks it's the quarterback. But you also agree that the offensive line has played the worst, right, out of all those groups.
It's, to me, the area with the least amount of talent outside of Onwenu and Andrews, and that's not to be mean to the rest of the line. It's just, it's seriously lacking. And what's most frustrating about this is you ended up here last year. Now, you had Trent Brown at left tackle, but if you remember, Bill Belichick went on like a waiver spree at the end of summer, just signing a bunch of offensive linemen, mm-hmm, that to nothing contracts to try to add some kind of depth. and it didn't work. And so then you bring in Elliot Wolf to this new position, and you re-sign so many guys from Bill Belichick's last roster, which was a 4-win team. But on top of that, you don't look at the one area that has the biggest glaring need with Trent Brown leaving. At least you had a body there that right. sometimes decided it was going to play. And it's so it's worse off. And I just I think that's the one thing that this front office really needs to answer for is how could you neglect that area of personnel so much? It's one thing to say Brandon Ayuk didn't want to come here. And look, he's still with the Niners. He might just play with the Niners. It's not just about us. It's about him. Calvin Ridley's wife didn't or girlfriend didn't want to live up here. And then you throw a bunch of stupid tax excuses about it. Like, that's different than saying this has been a need for a couple years. Mm-hmm. And you basically are doing the same thing that Belichick did last year, except maybe worse. That's where you're at.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to think of it in those terms, but that's very true. Tim is in Hanover. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, guys. Hey, Mego, can you say tackle, tackle, tackle?
Can you not?
Well, that's what we need.
Right.
Yeah, obviously. We don't want no converted gods. I've been saying this for over 3 years myself. If they need a tackle, they got to get a strong agility tackle because a converted god ain't going to be able to hold that DN rushing or the safety coming in for the blitz. They need to get that body to help these quarterbacks out, man. Otherwise, and our linemen. Our running backs. Our running backs need them to blow the holes open. So let's see what happens, man.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for the call. I think at the very least, at right tackle, Caden Wallace played that in college. Okorafor played that in Pittsburgh. Now, Okorafor lost his job to Broderick Jones, and you know, with Wallace, he was a backup. I think he was a backup tackle for the first 2 years, and then we'll see what he looks like out there. He's a rookie offensive lineman. I mean,
he's
that could be very
baby.
Hit and miss. And even still, none of those guys are left tackles. Like that's the thing that bothers me the most. I understand having to experiment sometimes or, you know, whipping things together for a position where you may have let it fall by the wayside, but to let that happen with left tackle when you have a rookie quarterback who's right-handed just seems like such a dereliction of a very basic thing that, I don't know, it doesn't leave me with a lot of confidence, that's for sure. 617-779-7937, there's your phone number. We got Megsplaining coming up at 5:30. What do we have in Megsplaining today, Mego?
Sad hour. Happy hour dream is dead again. Let me tell you something. I don't think this is ever going to get done. We'll discuss it next.
Yeah. What's going to happen first? The Revs Stadium in Everett or happy hour coming back to the Commonwealth? Or neither one ever? We'll discuss that during Megsplaining. But first, here's Joe Braverman to tell you what's trending.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive in the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the critics have spoken.
It's as if you took a float from a Macy's Day Parade and you beheaded them, and it's two clowns.
Jones and Mako.
One looks extremely upset, and the other one looks intrigued.
On WEEI.
Seems like each of the last two for Cutter, like, he'll cruise through five almost, and then, like, the sixth comes and sort of, obviously, third time through and all that.
Yeah, I mean, the red flag was a walk, you know, and then the command was off, I felt. So, you know, you got to trust the roster, right? And, you know, Horn, he made some good pitches early on, 2-1 cutter, foul ball, and then curveball that stayed there, you know, and hit out of the ballpark. But we had our chances later on, and we weren't able to catch in.
Alex Cora after the game last night. Red Sox lose, split in the series, but fall 4-2 to Baltimore in the fourth game. They lose another game in the standings as the Royals just keep on winning. And that was Cora sort of talking about why he pulled Cutter Crawford. Now, people were somewhat upset about that. It was 2-0 when they took him out. It was Adley Rutschman hit a home run, and there was like a ground out fielder's choice that drove in the other run. They go to Bailey Horn, and boom, Gunnar Henderson knocks one over the fence there. And it's a 4-2 game, and at that point it was 4-0. And then the Red Sox scored a couple runs in the eighth and ninth innings. The problem there was not necessarily the pitching, it's that the Red Sox didn't score any runs until very late in the game. That was same sort of thing in that 12-10 game. That was one where they didn't really blow things open until late in the game, and it seemed like maybe the offense wasn't quite clicking there. Now, I don't think that the offense has been a problem for this team lately. I don't think anybody would say that. I don't think anybody believes that. But there is sort of now this inability to get on the same page, you know? Like, there was a time where it seemed like everything was cranking, and, like, you had the offense going, starting pitching was going well. In the very beginning of the season, you had the bullpen starting to round into form. Injuries may have changed that up a little bit. Even with the offense, that may have changed up things a bit, too. But all in all, it just seems like this team is not quite able to put it all together. And that's you know, it's sad to see that, because it seemed like there was real potential for this team to make a playoff run.
Right. It's almost like they can't be opportunistic, whether it's stranding guys on bases, the bats coming alive.
So many of those last night, by the way.
Stranding so many guys. That's what I'm talking about, is you wait until you're very late in the game, not intentionally. It's just the situation that you find yourself in. And then, of course, you know what's happening on the other side. And I understand why people were aggravated that Crawford got pulled when he did, because I was looking it up. I think his six last starts, he hasn't gone six innings. And so there is one thing about, hey, Tanner Houck had way too much on his plate for the first third of the season. Mm-hmm. And you've really seen the fatigue and wear and tear. And they've had guys like Nick Pivetta dealing with fatigue. And so you got to be conservative, but that's really tough to sell when then you have the bullpen struggles that you have. So, you know, when you pull a starter like that, boom, it's a bomb from Gunnar Henderson, and that's kind of what everyone's expecting. Like, ugh, here's the worst case scenario again. And so this is what I was saying when there was that little stretch coming out of the brief swoon mm-hmm. that they had after the deadline, where then they were winning series again, and Jones was all happy about the Fun Sox again. And I just said, I think that you can't be a team that's as lopsided as this is. There's not enough with the offense to consistently make up for the struggles that of an okay rotation at this point and an absolutely dismal bullpen.
Yeah.
Those things, like, your offense is not some historic dynamic full of stars like Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge over there. Not to discredit the guys in your lineup, in your order, but it's not the same caliber to outweigh those things on the other side.
Yeah, even with Cassius being back, and he had a couple of hits last night, so, you know, he seems to be getting back in the swing of things. But last night, 11 runners left on base, 1 of 14 with runners in scoring position. They were 1 for 14. And it seemed like every single inning they had at least a guy on second, you know, and they just could not knock him home. That's, you know, what are you going to do? Like, that's a unfortunate scenario to be in right there. But again, you know, we're talking about going up against these teams. It's a tough schedule they have here in the second half. This has been a very, very difficult schedule because they're taking on teams like Baltimore and like Houston and like Kansas City and all these other teams that really went for it, you know, that really knew that it was going to be a dogfight.
down the stretch. They knew what they had to do in order to stay relevant and stay a part of it. And the Red Sox had a team that was competitive and was competing with all these teams. But the deadline came and went. These other teams left you in the dust. I mean, that's as simple as that. I hate to put it in terms like that because we've seen that the last couple of years. And we all thought this team was different. Well, we didn't all think that. Jones thought this team was different. Jones went, oh, no, it's not like last year. It's not like the year before that. You watch. August's going to come around, even if they don't go crazy at the deadline. This team's not going to quit. And I don't think necessarily that they're quitters. But you can only do what you can. You know, you're only as good as what you are. And this team is a good team, not a great team by any means, and not a team that I think is going to be able to, going forward, hang around with these guys.
Their schedule does loosen up when the Royals gets harder, if you look at the two schedules side by side.
Coming up after Houston, and who do they have after Houston?
Arizona.
So, I mean,
after
Arizona's
those two
tough,
series,
too.
It gets easier, and the Royals schedule gets harder.
Okay.
They got the Phillies. I think they have the Astros as well. So it's not all hope is lost.
Good. I mean, listen, I don't want hope to be lost. I honestly
to your
don't.
Point, though, Arcan, like, they are scrappy. They're not quitters. They're not. I think that they have more energy.
I think they could win this game tonight. I think they could actually give Houston a series here.
Well, they respond better with their backs up against the wall,
right,
as you said before, than teams last year and the year before. I think Cora's got everybody's heads in the right space. It's just they don't have enough. They just don't have enough. Especially with when you see what other teams did at the deadline and making real additions and spending real money and going and getting guys for the rotation. And you didn't do that. And it's tough because you could have the front office, but maybe even more so ownership, say, we added two arms in the bullpen and it got worse. So what lesson do we take away from that? And he slipped out of the wild card race. So what lesson do we take away from that investment?
You want to know how bad it's gotten in this bullpen?
Are they below the White Sox now?
No. They called Greg Weissert back up.
Very good.
That should tell you something. Greg Weissert got optioned back down in July, I believe, at the end of July, after putting a record of like ERA of 7 together and blowing a bunch of saves. That was, I mean, Weissert, you remember in the Dodgers series, he was getting knocked around. Like they had a real problem there, and he was sort of emblematic of the bullpen issues that this team was going through. And they just optioned Bailey Horn down to Worcester and brought up Greg Weissert. So, I don't know. Hey, maybe this time around it'll be different. I guess we'll see. David is in Florida before we get to Meg explaining. Hi, David.
Arcan, Meglo, how are you?
Great.
Good.
How are you?
What's going on?
I mean, I cannot, you know, the bullpen, the pitching staff is deplorable, but that is what it is. I mean, Cora, he pinch hits too much. I mean, sometimes he gets a feeling he would pinch hit for Big Poppy if there was a lefty on the mound. I mean, he pinch hits. What is this, like a JV high school game where everybody has to play? He just, I mean, that thing he did yesterday when he pinch hit for Connor.
For Connor Wong and brought in Gasper. I didn't like that either. I did not care for that. Yeah, I didn't like that choice he made.
That was beyond stupid. I mean, they should be, with the speed they have in this team, I mean, as many stolen bases as they have, they should have more. They should be bunting at least once or twice a game. I mean, he doesn't use it.
You lost me there, David. I don't want him bunting. I don't want anybody bunting.
Haven't gotten on, at least in this time slot, we haven't got a bunting call in at least 6 months.
So there's a bit of controversy surrounding this very topic. When I was doing Red Sox Review a million years ago, back in 2015 or 16, whatever it was, I coined a phrase called the old-timey bunt brigade. And I attributed it to our older callers, I think older than David in Florida, but who used to call in and say, how come no one knows how to lay down a bunt anymore? I mean, we used to get these calls all the time. I don't like the way the game's going. No one likes to bunt. And I called these people the old-timey bunt brigade. And then, I forget who it was. It might have been like Volani or one of the other guys like me who was on the weekends. Started saying that too and then made it seem like he came up with it.
Take snake?
Yeah.
Even worse than a take snake, it's like a phrase,
yeah,
a catchphrase.
A phrase that I coined, and it was also a little, you know, a little not palindromic. What is it when all the words start with the same letter? Alliterative. Yeah, it was alliterative. Like, I was proud of that one, the old-timey bunt brigade. And then someone snaked the whole thing right from me, and then I left here and went to work somewhere else. And that became, like, the thing. And I started that. I started the old-timey bunt brigade.
Did you ever confront
the person? No, because now I can't remember who it was, and I left. And so I think it all just kind of, you know, it was just one of those things that happens over the course of your career.
Well, but consider it a message for whoever it is that's out there.
Yeah, you watch out. Don't steal my jokes anymore. Anyway, with that in mind, let's get to Meg explaining.
Why don't you explain this to me like I am an 8-year-old?
Do you need it broken down?
It's so dumb.
Why don't you explain this to me like I'm 5?
Well, lucky for you.
I don't know how else to talk about it.
Shut up, Meg.
It's time for...
Now I let you know!
Meg-splaining.
Meg-splaining.
I saw something on Twitter that I've been trying to corroborate all day, and I can't find anything from, a more traditional news source is how I would phrase this, because the only in Boston Twitter X account tweeted this out 6 hours ago at this point. Alert, Massachusetts lawmakers will not be bringing back happy hour to the Commonwealth at this time after Massachusetts restaurants spoke out against the legislation. So this is a story. I know the morning show has covered it. It's been in the news. It's in the news every year, but it's been in the news a lot this summer because there was a bill that I believe got approved by the Senate. This is CBS Boston. They were interviewing a couple folks around town, business owners and patrons, just 2 weeks ago, what they thought about the possibility of happy hour returning to Massachusetts.
It's been 40 years since bars offered happy hour in Massachusetts. William Allitt remembers those days.
Each additional hour, it would go up 50 cents. It would start off 50 cent beers, the next hour, a dollar, all the way until 10 o'clock, and it'd be like $2.
If there's no one in your bar right now, I'd rather offer a discount to get them in and be spending something than just have no one there.
So that second clip was Dave Hoover from Banners, which we've done watch parties at. Great
sure.
place. Highly recommend it if you want to watch the Bruins or the Celtics during the playoffs. But I'm just done with this. It's never happening. I have conceded the point. Like, I just give up. It's never coming back. It left in 1984. I don't want to talk about the tragic event that made that bill go through or that was... There was the motivation for lawmakers to say, no more. We need to protect people against drunk driving.
And that was like the big one, but it was a big problem at the time, too.
Right. It and just, it's still, I'm sure it still is an issue.
Game over, man. Game over.
You're one of 8 states now that doesn't have happy hour. And even some of the others that, quote, don't have happy hour have leniency towards a happy hour-like setup where you can do an all-day drink special or something like that.
Right.
So the other ones are Alaska, Indiana, North Carolina, Utah, Washington, Vermont, and Rhode Island. Previously, Oklahoma was in that group, but Oklahoma just finally said over the last year or so, you know what? Let's basically just do happy hour again. I mean, it's like... It's like 99% happy hour that they have down there. There's some weird little exclusion loophole thing that you can't do. I honestly wasn't that interested in it. But how do you feel about this, Arcan, as both somebody who I imagine would frequent happy hour if it was around and somebody who has a deep background and interest in the restaurant business locally?
Well, I think I was 2 or 3 years old when the band started, so I've never really known happy hour in Boston ever. I think at this point, everybody's sort of so dug in that if you open that door back up, it's going to be good for bars that aren't doing great. You know, like they're the ones who are going to be like, all right, like that guy said, we're going to get people in here. We'll throw out a bunch of discounted drinks and we'll get everybody in here. The big issue, though, and why I think, and who tweeted that? Only in Boston, right?
Only
in Boston,
Boston
the Twitter account?
It, and I've been looking for updates elsewhere. I looked at Globe, Herald, the TV station.
This would be big news if this came out like this. There's no way that he knows that, or he or she, whoever it is that runs the account, and no one else does.
I don't, well, maybe it's just not verified yet. So I don't know.
I'm
just saying it's out there.
But didn't the government, aren't they done? Didn't that whole thing, that like the Rev Stadium didn't pass? I think their session's over with, right?
I don't know, Arcan. I'm saying, so you think we should hold out hope that happy hour still might be returning?
No, I don't think you should, because I think at this point, the bar owners are probably going to say, you know what, we've survived without it this long. It means having to slash our prices, which is the whole foundation of the whole bar business in the first place, is that you're selling liquor for much more than you paid for it. And, you know, that's sort of the idea. Now, if there's a bunch of places that are all still doing poorly post-COVID, I feel like most of the places that were doing poorly are already closed.
Right.
You know, like there's a bunch of new places that just opened. I could see that being something where the owners all kind of look at each other like, all right, nobody crossed the picket line. Like, let's not get back into this, because once you open that door, we're all going to be racing to the bottom trying to give away our profits. And I just think that, you know, after 40 plus years, this is Massachusetts. People get into a rhythm and a routine and a business model. They don't necessarily want to just go ahead and abandon it, you know?
If you want to see me enjoying a delicious Cosmo, it's up on twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. That's actually, you were there, Arcan. Not that time, but that's my wedding venue.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm sitting at the bar there.
That's at the distillery.
At the distillery.
I enjoyed the cocktails.
The cocktails there were delicious.
They were very good.
They are potent.
Yeah.
So I have had, since our wedding, I've had probably 6 or 7 different people come up to me and apologize because they think that they're the drunkest people who are at the wedding. Some people haven't apologized, but some people have. And
who was the drunkest person at the wedding?
Some people say it was Jones.
Really?
Yeah. I've got probably 6 other candidates.
Mr. or Mrs. Jones? Could have been either one. The drunkest, I don't know. He left early, so it's sort of hard to pin him down. Let's see. Who was really, I'm trying to think of, like, at the after party. Because at the distillery, I didn't think anybody was too. No one was, like, cocked, you know? Like, it wasn't, like, one of those type of things.
There were some cousins who really got after it. And there were some tears that were shed over things that were said between young couples.
Really?
Yeah. It was a great balance, because there was, like, a certain level of drama that I found out after the fact happened. But none of it was serious drama. It was all just stupid drunk drama.
Okay.
And so I felt good about that, because I felt like there were stories that came out of it, which I liked.
The least drunk person was DJ Bean. I can tell you that.
He didn't drink.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure. Wasn't he your driver?
He was our designated driver.
Okay, so
yes.
Perhaps he was the least drunk
person.
And
let me tell you something else. When we pulled up at, what was the name of that bar? Bubba's?
Bubba Sulky's.
When we pulled up at Bubba's,
Talk about it. The listeners are disgusted that I brought people there for an after party.
Why?
They say it's like just the most disgusting place. I think it's so fun. I think it's
wonderful. I love that bar. I had a great time there.
I love it too.
Yeah.
I went there 2 nights in a row.
The toilet was backed up in the bathroom, which wasn't great. But, you know, whatever. That's not their fault.
Was it Jacoby Brissett?
It could have been. I don't think he would have gone in that one.
Trent Brown.
That's the type of bathroom where the Jacoby Brissett is probably like when he thinks of like a gross bathroom. It's probably like that one.
That's framed on his wall with
right.
a message, "Do not do it."
Never again. Something like that. But no, I enjoyed that bar. I thought it was good. Maine has happy hour, right?
I think so. They're not on this list.
They're not on the list? So
I don't think I've ever gone, though, because usually I'm only up there on Saturdays and Sundays. But I would definitely participate in happy hour if it returned. When I lived in D.C., it was a big thing. And it
we
still
heard
is
how you spend
thing.
Your Thursdays. So that's not a surprise.
It's true.
Look, as long as I got out of here on time, I would, you know, I would scoot over to happy hour as quickly as I could. I think it's stupid. I've had this conversation with plenty of people before. You have ride shares now. I think the culture locally is pretty different than it was in 1984. I think everywhere people have a lot more awareness about drinking and driving and alcohol consumption and what's safe and what's not safe. Not to say it's not an
issue. People in Boston are better about drinking.
Yeah.
Alcohol consumption?
I wasn't here in 1984, so I don't know. I'm not saying people don't get drunk and do idiotic things every weekend / most nights of the week. Of course, that still happens. I'm not, like, completely naive. But I think there's a lot more education out there of people. I mean, I was scared to death of drinking and driving when I was growing up.
Sure.
That's like what that was the whole, like, mothers against drunk driving and that whole thing.
That's fine. And that's another part of the reason why I think some of these business owners are like, hey, you know, now that we're slashing prices on our liquor, we have to cut people off a lot more often. You know, we're going to have to not overserve people, because if someone gets in a car or someone walks out in the street and gets hit by a bus or something like that, and they got overserved in our establishment, then we're going to have to pay all
There's
these fines
liability.
And liability and all that other stuff. So that's another aspect of it that I think, you know, going forward here, once you get used to not having it and not having to worry about all these other things, when you change that very drastically, there's going to be just the behavior is going to change. You know, like college kids who are in Ulster, who are right, you know, up the street here. Oh, wow, we can go down and get, you know, a bunch of shots for $5. We'll go
beers.
Do that. Yeah, like that's. You think they're going to be responsible about that? It's going to be this whole big thing. I don't think it's going to go that way at all. I think if they stick with it, the first couple of weeks are going to be rough out there. Like, you don't think so?
You have
a lot more faith in these people than I do.
The people
of Boston, our audience.
I'm sure that you could do some kind of, they wouldn't just roll this out. Think about what they did with legalizing marijuana.
Right.
Like recreational marijuana. They would have pilot systems. They would go through all different levels of this. It's not like all of a sudden one Friday they'd say, guess what? Happy hour's back. And right. every establishment in the city, including by all the colleges, gets happy hour. It wouldn't be that quick.
No, but people rush into the happy hour places and they'll, you know, it's the whole point. You're saving money, right? So let's get after it. Not that there's anything,
such a narc.
Anything wrong with that. I just think that, I don't know. I think it's going to be a tough road.
You've been conditioned to
this. Also think that this one Twitter account doesn't, how do they know that and no one else does?
I'm telling you, I did exhaustive Googling trying to find this and I couldn't find anything update. So
all right.
It might just not be coming back.
Boston reporters, you got to catch up to the Only in Boston Twitter account here or he was wrong. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll come back and wrap things up with Bet Roulette next.
Questions that you need answered.
How does this bra work again? Why are there so many clasps?
You're listening to Jones and Mego on WEEI.
Look, excited to have the guys back out here still working hard, still out here competing. I know you guys are probably wondering who's going to play in the game. Everyone that's healthy is going to play in the game. Not sure what Washington is going to do, but it really doesn't matter. It's what we need to do, what we need as a team.
Why is having all the starters play?
Yeah, to me, like the only way to get better at football is to play football. We can run around here in shorts and whatever and tag off or run out here in full pads and not tackle and then get to the game and it looks like crap. So I think it's important to get that live action and also to build on our conditioning.
Pour me something tall and strong, make it a hurricane.
It's Gerard Mayo. Talking yesterday. Only way to get better at football is to play more football. I feel the same way about betting on football.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Only way to get better at it is to just keep doing it. Won't be doing that tonight in Bet Roulette as there are no football games to bet on yet. But we're getting very, very close. And we do have Bet Roulette coming your way in just a minute. But first, we have some happy hour calls on the line that we'll get to right now. Richard is on the Cape and he's mad at Mega. Why are you mad at Mega, Richard?
Not angry. That was a misstatement on your producer's part. Oh. Now, first of all, I love all you guys.
We love you,
and
too.
And I'm especially happy that Jones is not around today. Anyhow, what I wanted to say was I'm not certain of Mego's age, but I'll bet she was not around hanging out in bars that I was working in 1984.
I don't think she was alive in 1984.
It's true. I wasn't
so
alive.
Yes, probably not. Anyway, why, Richard? What's the difference?
You catch it. And I think she made a comment indicating that, hey, things have changed. We have different social mores. We have ride sharing. We have Uber. We have Lyft. We have everything. We have limos.
Young people are drinking less generally, Richard. That's another thing. But I mean, yeah, but go ahead.
I understand that completely. The smart people are drinking less. The lunatics and the morons who endanger all of our lives are striding forward, I promise you. They're going for the gold. What I'm saying is the people who make decisions about ride sharing, a limo, a taxi, whatever, they're not the people who are getting hammered thinking that they're saving $3 a drink. They don't understand that it could cost them $1,000, $1,500 if they're caught in a DUI. They also tend to not think about that they might ruin or end someone else's life.
Okay, but that's not something that's germane just to Massachusetts, all right? I mean, like, that's a thing that bars all over the country. I mean, that's something that, you know, you have to worry about and think about no matter where you are, whether it's happy hour or not. I mean, so, I don't know. At some point, we're all adults here, right? Like,
yeah, Richard is speaking from experience, it sounds like, from working in bars and restaurants.
Sure.
So I respect that completely. And you're right, I wasn't around here in 1984. I wasn't alive. I would say I also think it's a different calculation based on where you live in Massachusetts. So maybe there just needs to be a breakthrough that would allow municipalities to decide for themselves. Look, you have a town like Wellesley that doesn't have liquor stores. You have to go over to the next town to buy liquor in a store there, a package store. And so why can't that be the case for how you serve alcohol at restaurants, too? If you think that Boston is more conducive because it has public transportation, and it's certainly much easier to get an Uber there than it's some part of the Cape.
Wellesley, yeah.
Well, some part of the Cape in dead of winter, I agree with you. And that could really be a barrier to safely enforcing something like happy hour. But I think you should at least be able to open the doors to letting that regulation through, because I do think that it's kind of ridiculous that we're stuck in this 40-year situation because of a huge tragedy that happened in a different time.
Yeah, that's fair enough. All right, Matt and Walpole, you get the last word. Go ahead, Matt.
What's going on? Yeah, we're all really puritanical on a Monday today, aren't we?
Seems like it.
I don't understand. I don't understand the idea that everyone thinks that happy hour just means you have to get hammered. Can't you just go and enjoy a cheap drink? Can I not pay $14 for a gin and tonic?
Matt, you can. Like, and we can. There's a lot of people that's, you know, the reasonable people, sure. But who's going to take advantage of the happy hour prices? Like people who, as the previous caller said, are going to go out and get after it.
Yeah. Well, I guess. I mean, people take advantage of everything. That's what I think. I went to college in Maryland. Go Mego.
Thank you.
I loved going out after class on a Friday and going to get a drink for $3 and not like, you know, half my paycheck.
Right.
So that's what I think is,
well,
I think it makes a lot of sense.
Matt, listen, I mean, almost every other state in the whole country has it. So I just think that once you bring it back, once it becomes like the big thing, like, hey, everybody, it's happy hours back, immediately there's going to be a bunch of problems. I just think that's going to be it. Going from one to the other is going to create the problems. If you've had it and everyone's used to it, then fine. You know, it's just, as you said, I'm just going out for a couple of drinks. I get them on discount. Hey, happy hours coming back to Massachusetts. That's a different, it's a different mentality. Does that make any sense?
Pilot program. When I was, right after I moved out of D.C., I went back and visited, and we were in this bar, and my friend, I was way younger at the time, I was like 22, and my friend said, well, this bar is actually open till 5 or 4. And I was like, what do you mean? Because usually bars in D.C. close at 2, 2:30.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, they're doing a pilot program where some of the bars are open till 4.
Wow.
And she said, it's like really quiet.
How'd that go?
And it's only every other weekend or something. I don't know. I would never stay out until 4 at this point in my life. I'm like way too lazy and tired. But there's ways to test these things out where it's not like all of a sudden the floodgates open.
Right.
And every person who can't control themselves or every 21-year-old is celebrating their birthday at happy hour on a Friday at the same time. Like, I think everybody just jumps to the worst case scenario.
I know. That's generally how these things go. All right. With that in mind, let's get the bet roulette.
All right. I'm going to give you a choice. You can either have the money and the hammer, or you can walk out of here. You can't have both. You don't f*** around in this place. You got it?
Boo! Boo! That's it. Gambling.
Bet Roulette is brought to you by Cars for Kids, the easy way to donate your car. Donate today. Your car can be picked up tomorrow. Go to carsforkids.com or call 1-877-CARS-4-KIDS. I don't know how we did on Friday. Ryan's probably got that somewhere, but he's not here today, so let's just go ahead and roll for today. Go ahead, Mego.
Okay. I rolled a 2.
Mego's roll is a 2, and according to my calculations here, that is Tanner Houck strikeouts tonight, as it's Houck going for the Red Sox against Yusei Kikuchi for the Astros. Ooh. The over-under for Houck strikeouts, 4.5, Mego.
This is going to be interesting, because Kikuchi was a guy who was very available leading up to the deadline.
Sure was.
But he could have gone and gotten, so could be tough if he shows up, Houck, or just your guys in general. So I'm going to go with Houck. I'm going to go with the over for Houck, I should say.
Houck, over 4.5
strikeouts.
Over 4.5
strikeouts. I hope that he can stay in and eat some innings, be more like the guy at the beginning of spring than he was at different points this summer. And I'm going to go for the over there.
All right, Mego, hoping for the best with Tanner Houck tonight. My roll is a 6, and that is Seth Lugo strikeouts against the Angels tonight. That is the Royals, and Lugo, who's been so good this year. It is an over-under of 5.5 strikeouts. I feel like the Angels strike out a ton, so I'm going to take the over on that one. I'm not sure where the juice on that bet is, but I'll go with over 5.5 for Lugo against the Angels. Joe, I'm going to roll for you. Your roll is a 5, and that is Red Sox-Astros on the money line. It is Houston minus 146. What do you say?
I'm going to take the money here and go with the Red Sox.
All right. All
go
right.
With the Sox here. Get feeling
good
about
this parlay, huh?
Nice.
All right, very good. So Mego likes the over on Tanner Houck strikeouts. I like the over on Seth Lugo strikeouts. And Braverman likes the Red Sox on the money line, which is plus money. I don't know exactly what it is. That's got to be a juicy parlay. What do we got?
So adding it up, it is a 574. Plus 574. The Sox are plus 124 on the money line.
Okay.
Quite reasonable.
Yeah, it's more reasonable than I thought. I thought we were going to get up in like the 6s or the 7s. Anyway, fade or follow, whatever you feel like doing. I feel pretty good about this parlay here. We'll be back tomorrow. Jones will be back tomorrow in the big chair. We'll have Joe continue here in tomorrow, right? All right, very good. As Ryan takes his vacation, we'll talk to you tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Stick around. We got an hour of Rich Keefe coming your way before Red Sox pregame. We're out of here. Enjoy the rest of your Monday night. Bye. We'll be right back.
That's the pumpkin market.
See the greatest gift will be
I don't
for
know
me.
This song.
And the card inside would say, thank you for being a friend.
I think you had to seek out the public restroom, whether it's a non-negotiable for you or not.
I agree.
You prefer your own pants.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon. And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.